What is good, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Hype Report. I hope you're good. Thank you for the support on all the previous episodes so far. And today I'm joined with someone who I'm a big supporter of, someone I've admired for a long time. The founder of the pre-loved designer specialists, Lux Collective, aka Ben.
Thank you for having me.
How are you, man? You good?
Yeah, I'm good.
It's an honor, bro. It's an honor. I'm so excited, man. I've watched your stuff for so long. Thank you so much for coming on. Tell the people who you are and what you do for those who don't know you.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Ben. I founded Lux Collective with my brother in about 2018. We officially made it into like a corporation, a proper company, in about December of 2020. So I've been trading now for about 3 years.
Nice.
4 years. And we buy and sell pre-loved luxury goods. And similar to you, we got onto TikTok at a very similar time. And as you said, you're a massive admirer of me. Obviously, that's very kind. But what you've done as well is crazy. I took a lot of inspiration from the way you created your videos in the aspect of storytelling, which effectively what we do on socials at the moment, and that's how we've grown the brand. Yeah, got about 2.5 million followers on socials, and
just the 2.5 million, just the 2.5 million, yeah. Which is very impressive, by the way, for a company, because you know how hard it is to build a brand when it's not an individual.
Yeah.
Like, it's so hard, man. So you've smashed that.
Yeah. I get envious of individuals who get paid to create these videos that get not a lot of views. And then we create videos as creators and businesses and get hundreds of thousands of likes, never mind just views.
Yeah.
And the reward is just an ego stroke, you know?
I guess, yeah. But yeah, I mean, mate, it's amazing. So you effectively started this out the back of your bedroom.
Yeah.
And now you are here, and you recently had investment from one of the Dragons.
Yeah, I forgot about that bit. So we went on Dragons then. It was last May, actually, so nearly a year now. And it got aired in January.
Yeah.
Genuinely one of the best experiences of my life. It was just so cool.
I loved it, mate, because obviously it was like someone who not close to me, but someone who operates in the same space.
Yeah.
Getting national recognition.
Yeah.
And it was amazing, man.
Yeah, it was just insane. Like, we got like a million people on the website that night.
Wow.
It was honestly unbelievable.
Did you see a big result in sales, or was it just impressions?
So we couldn't have gone on Dragon's Den at a worse time, to be honest, because it was just off the back of November and December, so Black Friday, the last quarter of the year where you want to sell all your stuff. We sold through 80% of our stock, so we had about 300 items on the site in January when it went live, because it was the very beginning of January. It's January the 4th.
Wow, okay.
So we had no stock. But what it did do is, obviously, going on national TV and something like that is like better than a blue tick on Instagram, you know? Like, the verification you get from it is just crazy. And just like the people reaching out to you and the companies reaching out to you wanting to work off the back of it. But also, like, the products we sell aren't a split buying decision. So a lot of companies that go on Dragon's Den are like 30, 40, 50 pound average order. Like, ours is like 500, 600, 700 pounds.
Yeah.
So like, people aren't going to watch the TV show, go on the site and just instantly
quick,
buy.
Quick little buy. Yeah. Big, it's like an investment type
thing. It's just
thing,
another touch point for our customers and potential customers. But yeah, it couldn't have gone any better, to be honest. I think the content we produced off the back of it was just incredible.
Yeah, it flew, man, didn't it? I was looking at a bit, when I was doing a bit of research last night, I was looking at the spike. And I mean, your view, like you said, your views are amazing regardless, but I saw like this massive spike around like early Jan or whatever.
Yeah.
It was obviously when that shit was going down. But yeah. I mean, there can't be many brands who have been on TikTok to go on Dragon's Den like that. And
no, 100%, because I think TikTok were came out in like 2020. It never came out then, but that's when everyone started to be interested by it.
Yeah.
So like, it's only been like 3 or 4 years, and not many businesses have had so much traction, and especially the models that they're in, they wouldn't want to go on Dragon's Den. But for us, it's like, how do we create more hype and attention around the brand? Because it's such a niche, but also we know the market's growing and the market's out there. So yeah, I've looked up to Stephen for many years. I put up a picture on my Instagram of actually messaging him like 3 years ago, saying like, you inspire me every day.
Then
obviously got him as a dragon.
That's cool, man. Like, you got to sit on that for a long time. That's amazing.
Yeah. So it was just, to be honest, it wasn't like go on TV and get in front of all these people. It was like, get in front of Stephen Bartlett in any way possible. And that was the way. And
how do you even get on Dragon's Den? Do you just reach out to them?
Well, they reached out to us initially, and then we applied through the link they sent us, and then we didn't hear anything back. And then one day I was just like bored in the office. I was like looking through my emails, and I must have come across it again. And I was like, all right, I'll just apply again.
Yeah.
So I went on it, applied, heard back about a month later. And then the process was so long from there. Because I think we were one of the first to apply, because we applied in maybe the back end of 2022, and we didn't go on until May 2023.
Yeah, and then it doesn't even air until...
Yeah, so the process was like 18 months long.
Wow.
Yeah, it was so long. Incredible, though. Anyone who's got a small business out there, I'd definitely recommend doing it.
Yeah, that's sick, man. It's such an interesting story. Because you don't hear too much of like the back end of it and how you actually get onto it and stuff
like
that.
Well, that's what, from like a creator and content point of view, that was what I wanted to do. And the BBC actually messaged me when I started creating some content, and they made me delete a couple of posts because they were like, you can't say that. Cause I was just giving too much away. Cause obviously everyone likes transparency. Everyone likes to know behind the scenes. And I was saying some certain stuff, and they were like, you can't do that.
So,
but they were banging on socials. Like, I posted it the day after we went on Dragon's Den, and within an hour, I don't know what this is like for your ratio, but within an hour, it was on like 400K views. And I was like, this is banging.
Wow.
And then I got a call off them, and they were like, yeah, you're going to have to take that down because you've signed this contract. So if you don't take it down, we'll have to remove your episode. And I was like, oh, shit.
Damn. Bro, that would have hit big, big numbers, man.
I know.
Well, 400K is huge. So how did this actually start? So how did you get into effectively reselling designer stuff? I mean, did it start by actually selling like a Louis Vuitton bag in your bedroom?
No, so there's a lot of what we do down in London. So like there's a lot of, we call them like mom and pop stores. So like American version, mom and dad stores. Like there's tons of them where rich women just open a shop in London because they have such a big collection. They're like, oh, I need to sell it. I'll just open a shop. And a lot of them start that way. So like we went from that type of background, but we were always entrepreneurial. And the idea of luxury goods just came from my sister ordering a pair of shoes off a similar website. So I was like, at the time I was looking at building my own thing. That just happened to be front of mind because she'd got them for Christmas. And I was like, oh, like this is how we can afford luxury goods by buying them secondhand. So then I went to my brother because I had no money at the time. I had like 200 quid. I was like to my brother, can we start a business doing pre-loved luxury goods? But I think we're going to have to start with footwear because bags are really expensive. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, okay, how much money have you got? And he was like, £1,000. I was like, okay, not loads, but it's more than that.
Yeah, it's enough. Yeah.
So we started the business with £1,200. We started with footwear because obviously it was cheaper. But in Liverpool at the time, and in the UK at the time, luxury sneakers were like becoming really big.
So that would have been like what, the Balenciaga Triple S's and that kind of speedrunner type wave, because everyone 100%. Wanted them.
Alexander McQueen's.
Yes.
Oh my God. Do you know what? It was probably just before the Triple S and the Speed shoes were going massive.
Yeah.
It was when they were like, so the Triple S was introduced in 2015. This was about 2018.
Yeah.
But it was like, they were banging then. Because like when they first came out, everyone thought like they were like Lego shoes. Like no one was going to wear
them.
Yeah,
yeah. Like, no one really wanted them.
And then
them
by 2020, everyone had them. Like they still are now one of our best sellers.
Yeah.
Like people just love having them. So we started with shoes because we knew that the people down south, all the companies that were doing similar to what we wanted to do, they weren't really touching footwear. So we were like, okay, it's easier to authenticate. It's cheaper. And there's a market there already for it in Liverpool. So I was like, okay, let's start with that. And then we weren't ever going to go into bags. Like we never thought we'd get to this stage where we're at now.
Mm.
So like we never had the idea of doing bags ever. And then we had like this client and she was like, oh, I've got 6 or 7 bags here. Do you want to just take them off me and try and sell them? And we put them on the page and they sold out within like a day.
Wow.
And we made a lot of money on them.
So was that just on your own? You had your own small website at the time?
No, we were just selling through Instagram.
Wow.
Literally just selling through Instagram. Nice. We probably got to about 11,000-12,000 followers.
Nice.
But like it was so niche. Like it was so saturated.
Core
like
all community.
The, yeah, yeah, all the, yeah. It wasn't necessarily a community because back then on Instagram, it wasn't like community building. It was like pre-love stuff is like, back then was like people's dirty little secret, you know? Like they didn't want, like we got messages all the time saying, don't tell people I'm buying this off you.
Wow.
Or so don't tell people I'm selling this to you.
Shame, innit? Like, people were ashamed of kind of buying like stuff that wasn't 100%, brand new.
100%, but now it's cool.
Completely reversed.
So like, that's why I say this, and you'll relate to this a lot. Like, because you've had so much success on TikTok and we've had so much success in what we do. Like, not saying we're successful, but we've had success in what we do. Is you've got to have, and I think this is everyone's success, is like right place, right time. Like, we would, like, me and you definitely were right place, right time in terms of getting on TikTok and wanting to create and having a mindset of, oh, I just want to create videos for people. But then the second one is something that you can control, and that's you just never give up. Like, you just create and buy and sell or do whatever you're doing every day until it works. And that's what you've done with your videos, because you've been so consistent with them. And that's effectively what we've done with our videos and business.
Yeah.
Like, it's those two things, like, never giving up and right place, right time. And that is, and if you never give up, you will eventually get in the right place, right time.
Yeah.
Because like I said, we were so early on pre-love stuff, and like, it was embarrassing. It was people's dirty little secret. And now it's the coolest thing.
Yeah.
Like, the biggest luxury brands in the world, they're now doing it.
They have their, some, is it, I don't know if it's Farfetch or End or whoever it has their own pre-love section.
They all work with a company who do it for them.
Okay.
Some of it's for greenwashing, but they're still taking part in it, which shows there's so much scope
for it.
And the pre-love market's actually growing 3 times quicker than the primary market.
Wow.
Which is amazing.
Oh yeah, for so many reasons, man.
Yeah.
I guess it's a pretty difficult question, but I imagine with the cost of living crisis now, I imagine more people will be turning to fill their consumer habits by going pre-loved, right?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. So like the cost of living crisis affects everyone, right? But like, with pre-loved, it's, you could argue that it's a benefit for us, like you just said, because people are wanting to sell to get more money, but they're also wanting to buy cheaper product. And as soon as people buy product off us, like, the consensus of a lot of people is like, I can't believe I haven't done this earlier. Do you know what I mean? Because the product is so good and they're getting it for cheaper, which means they can essentially buy more if they want to or have money left over to buy other things. And we're also supplying that service of being able to buy stuff off people and take it off their hands.
Yeah.
So, it's such a good business model to be involved in. Tough, super, super tough. And I'm really glad that my first ever business is this business model, because as you know, when you were reselling stuff and still do, like, it's such a tough model.
It is. And it is, it's got this massive misconception that you become filthy rich from reselling a few shoes, and they think it's this kind of like dark arts, when it really, really isn't. You're moving, like, obviously it's different for you, because I imagine your margins are, because of the type of stuff you sell, the margins are very different to like our kind of level of shoes.
Yeah.
But it's very much for us, just get something in, and because we're a lot smaller than yourself, and you probably went through this initially.
Yeah.
It was like, get something in and then get the cash flow going again. Get rid of it, man.
Yeah.
You don't want to sit on product. I think this, again, is a big misconception of resellers wanting to, or like people who view resellers wanting to kind of like, that they should sit on stock and should invest in sneakers and invest in shoes, when the reality is you can do that if you are very, very, very well known and respected and have a lot of money.
Yeah.
But the reality is, you know, that's not the best. Well, you know, in my opinion, it's not the best.
No, 100%. Like, the biggest companies in our space in America, in Europe, like, they are either still not profitable or only just becoming profitable after 20 years.
Wow.
And like, they've had investment. So like, this business model is so tough for people. So like, it's such a long-winded way to create wealth from. But like, you just got to like decide, like, am I doing it to create wealth, or am I doing it to learn, or am I doing it to just because I love it?
Yeah.
But like, as long as you can survive, as long as you're not losing money, or as long as by 3 years time, you're going to be making all the money back that you've lost, like, it's fine. Like, I do this with my brother every single day.
Yeah.
Like, we've got a team of 35 people now, probably going to be like 50 by the end of the year, maybe 45, something like that. Like, we're just like super proud of what we've created. Like, my brother is flown all over the world in sourcing product.
Yeah,
like, sick. I've been able to fly all over the world going to fashion shows. Like, we've created a really tight knit team, and we've just invested in a 12,000 square foot unit. Like, we're just living a really like cool like life, because we just wake up every day loving what we do, you know?
Yeah, and that is like wealth and it's success in itself. Yeah, and money aside, just that is the peak. So a couple of kind of clickbaity questions here. So Aiden, take notes. What is the most expensive item you ever sold?
Ooh.
Just like in terms of actual like sold price and maybe not margins and profit.
Yeah.
Just
No, that's fine. Sold something yesterday on the website for like 7K.
Wow.
Sold a few bits for 7K. I'd probably say the most is about 8.5K.
Yeah.
But yeah, regularly sell stuff between like 4 and 8K on the website.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
And what products are they? Mostly bags?
Chanel bags. Okay, yeah. And Hermes as well. But we don't sell too much Hermes. Because like you said, with the cash flow, like it's just so tough.
Yeah.
Holding that product if you're not selling it quick enough. But Chanel Classic flat bags, we sell them regularly. And so the thing is with them is you can't buy, like if you're in need of one or in like you're wanting one so bad, you can't really buy them from the shops. So essentially people just look to get them pre-loved, but they're about $2,000 to $3,000 cheaper than new when you buy them pre-loved. And if you get a good condition one, then you absolutely smashed it, because in 5 to 6 years, if you want to get rid of it, if you keep it in good condition, you could sell it for more than what you bought it for pre-loved.
So it's a bit of an investment.
You know, those bags that you're spending over 5K on are 1,000,000% an investment.
Really?
100%.
It's really interesting, man. What I had a really, really good question. Why can't you buy a Chanel bag from the shop?
Just because they're very snooty and they're very like brand protective. So they don't want everyone.
So I couldn't go in there now.
It depends. Like if you get a good SA, they might be like, oh yeah, here it is. But they're just wanting commissions. Okay. Do you know what I mean? So like, it's right place, right time.
And is it true about sometimes having to spend X amount of money in order to get the next highest model bag or 100%. Something like that?
So if you want like the best one, which is the classic flap, which is the most in demand one, the SAs will be like, yeah, you have to spend like not a certain amount, which is a fixed figure, but they're like, oh, you need to buy these pair of shoes and then come back in a month and buy this wallet and then come back in and then buy this cheaper bag and then we'll offer you the bag that you want, you know?
Okay, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Especially for someone like myself in my space, like if I wanted to buy that with a pair of shoes, I don't think it really doesn't really happen. You obviously get very premium pairs of shoes.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's very, very different to that. If you walk into a sneaker store and a resale store, they will let you have it if you've got the money to buy it.
100%. Like the Hermes kind of example is just ludicrous. Like you will walk in there and they'll have bags there and they'll have them laid out and they're like, oh, you'll be like, oh, can I buy this one? And they're like, no. They're like, these like, why? It's just like, oh, I just can't, sorry.
That's crazy.
I know. They like Hermes... Unless you go, I've heard that the one in Paris is very lenient, but like not very lenient, just lenient compared to everyone else.
So how do you have to be a regular customer?
Yeah. Exactly. What? Like you have to build a relationship up with your sales associate.
Wow. So you can't go to loads of different stores. You got to go to the same one consistently.
Yeah. Or you can go to different stores, but if you use the same account and you just have to have one like point of contact.
Yeah.
So if you go to another store, you'll be like, oh, this is my SA and then my normal store. But it really helps if you go to the same person.
So if I wanted to buy Hermes bag right now, one of their products, what would I have to start with?
Probably just like a scarf.
Wow. And how much would that send me back?
So like that you have to start with their most profitable items, because like they don't make that much money on the bigger ticket items. So like their ready to wear stuff, their smaller SLGs, their homeware stuff, like that's where they make the margin. So the SAs will push that on you, like the cushions, you've seen the blankets of Hermes, you know, the shoes, like they make so much money on that. And then they're like, if you spend a certain amount, the SAs will be like, okay, you deserve one now.
So the bags aren't the most, like the, how much, what's the retail one of the bags?
7K. So about $10,000 to $12,000.
Wow.
So about £7,000, £8,000.
So $10,000, and that's not the most profitable item.
But you can buy it for about 7K, 8K. And then if you get hold of it, you could resell it for like 15, 20K.
Wow.
In the same day.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where would you resell it on, like any marketplace, eBay, something like that?
Yeah. Well,
everyone's after
if you
them.
Go to like a reseller like us, like we wouldn't pay that, but there are resellers out there that do, because we don't really deal with Hermes. It's a bit too premium for our customer.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Like it's future goals and stuff like that. But our core customer at the moment is just not spending that much money.
I get that. That's so interesting. That's what I said to you before the podcast. I was like, I'm so fascinated by stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, 'cause it's mind blowing.
Yeah.
Like, although I'm definitely no specialist in designer at all, but I am in the world a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and Stone just, Island, you do with
yeah,
a lot.
Just, it's so interesting when I watch your vids and I listen to stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's just so crazy, man.
Yeah. Because we were talking about the outlets before, innit?
Yes. So this is another good question, Aidan. You need to make note of this one. You made a video recently explaining, and I need to word this one correctly, explaining that some designer brands effectively fake their own bags.
Yeah. So obviously it's not faking, but so for outlets, the luxury brands will create lesser quality products to put there. So it's called MFO. So made for outlet.
Yeah.
So it's effectively a way in to get people who aren't customers of the brand to buy the brand and then effectively turn them over to where they make the most money, which is in their proper retail stores.
Yeah, okay.
So you'll go to places like Bicester Village, Cheshire Oaks, those types of outlet villages. You'll go, there'll be very basic shapes, there'll be very basic materials, but they will have the brand badge on. They are made still by the luxury brands, but they're just nowhere near the quality of what the stores are.
Okay. So what's different? So would this be the same product, just different material effectively?
So it would be a very similar shape.
Yeah.
So like a tote bag shape, which is just basically like an upside down triangle or like quadrilateral. And like, it's very, very similar to the actual thing, but it's just like a basic dumbed down version so people can have access to the brand, and then you get their email. It's basically like a lead generation for the brand. But don't get me wrong, in the outlets as well, they do put the real product next to it, and the SAs have to actually say that it's made for outlet if you ask them. So if you go up to them and be like, look, this feels different, is there a reason why, is it just specifically for the outlet? They have to say yes.
That's so interesting. So you're talking like Louis Vuitton, Chanel, stuff like that.
Not Louis Vuitton. So Louis Vuitton, Chanel don't do it. It's more places that are owned by like Kering. So that's LVMH. So Kering is like Gucci, Prada are their own, but they also do that. Saint Laurent, Alexander McQueen's Kering. So Kering is basically like the parent group.
Yeah.
So you've got four main parent groups in the luxury industry, which is Kering, which owns Gucci, Saint Laurent, Bottega Veneta, most of the Italian brands. Then you've got LVMH, who own most of the French brands, which is like Louis Vuitton, Dior, Fendi, I think, is LVMH as well. And then you've got Tapestry, which is like the American version. So you've got Michael Kors, Coach, unsure whether Marc Jacobs is in there, but yeah, that's like the American side of it. And then Richemont, which is like the ultra premium, so they've got like watch brands, and they have got a few fashion brands, but I can't think off the top of my head. But they're like the four main parents. But LVMH owns like 80% of it.
Wow.
And then it's probably Kering, and then Richemont, and then Tapestry in the US.
Damn. You're so knowledgeable about this, man. So honestly, I can listen to this all day. Another thing I wanted to query you on was, I saw the pyramid about designer.
Yes.
Talk to me about that, because I am definitely no expert in terms of where stuff is. A few of like the mainstream common brands, let's rank them a little bit.
Yeah. So the triangle is like accessibility and price. So if it's very accessible and low price, it'll be at the bottom. If it's high accessibility and low price, it'll be at the bottom. If it's low accessibility and high price, it'll be at the top.
Okay.
So let's put the bottom tier is like high accessibility and lower in price in like the luxury sphere. So you've got like Marc Jacobs and Coach, which I think are fantastic brands if you want to get into the luxury world.
Yeah.
Like Coach, I used to hate it. And similar to Mulberry as well, I used to think old women for Coach, old women for Mulberry. But like in the past few years, Coach in particular and Marc Jacobs have changed their marketing completely. And it's so Gen Z focused and it's so clever. And like, I think they are killer brands. Like I love them so much. Like the product they offer is just fantastic for people wanting to enter that world, you know?
Entry level, yeah.
100%. And then you've got like the mid brand, which is like semi-accessible. So like that means in terms of like product demand, product supply and cost, like the price of the product that you're paying for. So these will probably range, if we're talking about bags, between 700 and £1,000. So, or £1,200. So these are probably brands like Bottega Veneta, Chloe. What other brands would be in here? I'm trying to think of the ones we sell on our website. Coach. You could put Fendi in there.
Yeah.
You could put Alexander McQueen in there. You could put... All the brands I'm thinking of are just that top tier. Let's move on to the top tier.
Yeah, we go top tier.
So the top tier are like very, very expensive and very, very low in demand. So if we leave the last one, which is just so hard to get your hands on, but then you've got like Louis Vuitton, which is quite accessible, but very, very expensive. Dior, which is super, super expensive. Chanel is probably in that sphere. And then you've got Loewe, which is just an amazing brand. I absolutely love it. And then like Celine. And then the top, top, top one is the one we discussed before, which is Hermes.
Yeah. Wow.
So like even in the luxury world, there is cheap luxury stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's mid luxury stuff. Yeah, in that subculture, there's so
How
many
How would
different...
you... do that in the sneaker world and the sneaker brands? Like what brands would you put in that pyramid?
See, the thing is with sneakers, the obviously luxury is based on trends as well, but the trends and the hype change so much in sneakers. Like, I mean, like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you can look at stuff like where Yeezy is now.
Yeah.
Yeezy's probably right at the bottom.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we sell a lot of Yeezys because the universal hype was so, so big and people still want that shoe, like Yeezy 350, for example, because that time period when it was popping made such an impact. People still wear it now, or wear them now. But we bought a pair for 28 quid earlier today.
Really?
A pair of blue tints.
Like off Depop?
Yeah, yeah. Someone who works for us was buying them. And he was like, there's no insoles, but he's got them down from 40 to 28 quid. Should I buy them? I was like, yeah, just grab them.
Yeah.
We're selling for like 50.
I took my insoles out my Yeezys.
Yeah, a lot of people do that, man. Yeah, a lot of people do that. There's two reasons. One, because insoles are a really good way of telling if they're authentic. So a lot of people who have fakes can get rid of them.
Really?
But also they're a lot more comfortable because you go directly on the Boost foam thing.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. But, I had the Wave Runners.
Oh yeah, I got the Wave Runners too. They're fire.
Yeah, they're
still acceptable in the cool kids.
Yeah, I went through a phase of just being obsessed with Kanye. Probably like 2021 to 2022.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just obsessed with everything he did. I just thought he was a marketing genius. Now I look at him and I just think, oh, you're a bit of a twat.
Yeah, he's kind of lost lost his way. He's still. I don't normally even want to think about how much money he's earning, but he's so adored by so many people. He can kind of do what he wants, but yeah, it's...
I just used to, like when his documentary came out, I must have watched it 4 times on repeat. It was just amazing.
And
especially
his younger years. They were because he obviously interned at Fendi, didn't he? With Virgil and I think there was someone else there as well. But they learned a lot together.
Yeah.
And they started in luxury.
Well, he got jealous but like, who knows, hey? But like the rumor is that he got jealous of Virgil Abloh when he got the Louis Vuitton creative director job because he thought that job was for him.
Yeah.
And then he didn't speak to Virgil for ages. And then Virgil died.
Yeah.
Which is obviously
sad. That's very, very, very sad. But let's talk about Virgil because he was someone who actually crossed. I don't know why I didn't write this down. I'm an idiot. I don't know how I didn't think about this. But he was so influential in both sides of our, like what we do.
Crossover in our worlds, for
Huge
sure.
Huge crossover, man. I mean, how did that, you know, You give a little bit of insight.
Yeah, so with Virgil, obviously, he was just like, he's like the modern, was the modern archetype of like what everyone should be, like chasing what they love, chasing what they enjoy. Like that, I think it's called Ikigai in Japan, like do what makes you money, do what you enjoy and do what is a service to the world. And if you can find that midpoint in between all of those, then you've completed life.
Yeah.
You know, you've won, you found what you're here to do.
Mm.
And I think like he was at the pinnacle of that. Like he did everything. Like he did architecture in uni.
Yes.
He was starting clothing brands. Like when he was a kid, he was doing skateboarding all the time. He was doing DJing. He designed with, like you said, Fendi, and then he created his own brand. What did he do before Off-White?
Pyrex. And they had these crazy... Yes. So initially, what he would do, he would get Ralph Lauren blanks.
Yeah.
The like flannel shirts,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Just print them on the back.
Yeah, 23 Pyrex.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they, I don't know, they moved for so much money, man. People reached them for so much. And I think now, because he's obviously unfortunately no longer here, I mean, people still represent that. And it's a great... I think at time he got a lot of shit from it, but... obviously because he was effectively just like ripping off these 100% Ralph Lauren blanks, but it was so crazy, man. I was the first guy to do shit like that.
But people get shit for being ahead of their time.
Yeah, for know? Sure.
Like he was so ahead of his time. Like he was repurposing, like you said, like Ralph Lauren, like it was outlet stuff as well. He would go get so much stuff and then just print it on the back. That's so how he could create so much margin because they were so cheap.
Yeah.
And he would sell them for loads. But what he did was like, he did these really cool campaigns that no brands were doing at the time. Like they were quite dark, they were quite weird, but he got people talking about his brand. Like he was just a great trader of attention, you know? And then he obviously did Off-White, which was just fantastic, unbelievable. And then Louis Vuitton were in desperate need of a freshen up. Like they were dying. Like Marc Jacobs did an amazing job from like 1997, Marc Jacobs took over Louis Vuitton. Then I think he left in like 2007 or 2008, maybe a little bit later. And then Nicolas Ghesquiere took over and then they were just like dead. Like,
yeah.
From 2012, they just created crap. So I think Virgil Abloh took over in 2018. Or was it 2017? It was one of the two.
I'm not sure, mate. Yeah.
And he just merged the world, like he merged the worlds of streetwear, luxury, but just like I said to you before, he just made them so culturally relevant.
Yeah.
Like they did collabs with Nike, they did Supreme collabs. It was just an amazing time.
It was crazy, man. I mean, that was such a bizarre era. And I think obviously, you know, I'm probably a little bit biased because of my like upbringing with Supreme, but I mean, that collaboration with LV was absolutely insane.
It was just it was so tacky, but yeah, amazing at the same time.
It was unbelievable. And then every relevant person with money wanted to buy that. I mean, we're talking like footballers, like celebrities, like Justin Bieber, like all these insane celebrities are rocking an LV Supreme logo.
What piece sticks out to you the most of that collection?
You know, there's actually loads.
Really?
Like, there's so many. I mean, look, just the collection in general, they made so much stuff.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many accessories. Like, if you go on to StockX and show what they released, they did, like, gloves, sunglasses, wallets, multiple different wallets. Like, obviously, the OG, like, the Louis Vuitton. Like, what do you call them? Like, card holders and stuff like that. I think The BOGO hoodie was
the red, and, the bright red one with the white LVs. Yeah, I was going to say that.
And then that was the most iconic. And the chest was really cool.
Yeah.
They had that massive chest. It was probably like the size of that, maybe a little bit bigger, but yeah, it was just covered in the LV print. And you said, so tacky, man. Kind of gross to an extent, but everyone loved it.
Yeah.
And it was just like, wow, it was such a crazy time to be alive. And obviously because of the numbers they were moving for, I think people were naturally interested.
Yeah.
It was, mate, it was.
And then it created a whole, like they were pioneers of those worlds collaborating. Then you saw like Gucci do something, like collaborate with streetwear brands like Gucci Palace. They did something.
They've done quite a few. They did do that.
Prada and Adidas. Gucci and Adidas.
Yeah. And Gucci also done North Face, which isn't streetwear, but it's.
That was sick.
That was a puffer jacket.
I loved it. There's a picture of Billie Eilish wearing it.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing.
Yeah. I remember there was loads of images of like celebrities and UK celebrities rocking it as well, going around with like Molly May. I remember when she was wearing it. Everyone went crazy about that.
But that all came off the back of the Supreme Louis Vuitton collab.
Yeah. On the subject of Virgil, we obviously had his 3% rule, which was, I mean, you'll be better explaining it than I am.
Yeah, it was in our 7%. Was it 3%?
I thought it was 3.
Was it 3?
I thought it was 3.
Yeah.
This is embarrassing if I get it wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was 3.
Yeah, so, oh no, sorry. Yeah, it was 7 things.
Mm.
So, we got the numbers mixed up there. So, basically, if you... He was all about the world of ideation and embracing creativity and not pulling people down if they're inspired by a very similar idea. And you see that from Louis Vuitton and especially Off-White. They effectively just take other people's ideas and just change them by, like you said, 3%, which the whole rule was, he's quoted saying, it's like, if you have an idea and you've got at least 7 things different from the idea. So for example, a shoe, you could take... what I'm wearing now, the Adidas campuses, And if you change the aglet on the lace, the type of plastic you use, if you change the way the stripe is angled, if you put one more hole in, if you change the color of stitching, if you change seven different little things like that, then it's a new thing and it's your creation.
Yeah, that's because I mean that's effectively what he did with his.
That's
with
such
his,
a good question.
With his Nike collaboration, I think he had like did he have 10 shoes? I think he had 10 shoes.
Yeah,
I mean 10 shoes. That was in 17, 18, something like that. I can't actually remember.
This
now.
The off-white one.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was off-white and Nike, and that was groundbreaking as well. Another like huge...
we've got on our website the Nike Chicago Jordan Highs off-whites. They are. We're selling them for like $5,000-$6,000. Like
very expensive, man.
They are unbelievable. One of the sickest shoes.
They're crazy. And then you've got the blue ones as well, the UNCs. Yeah. And then
the Chicago's as well, the best of them.
Yeah, definitely, man. But that whole he's done since they've done so many cool shoes. They had the Air Max 97. They was done with Serena Williams.
What are the ones with all the bubbles as well?
The VaporMax.
The VaporMax, yeah, they were sick.
Because VaporMax were introduced to kind of combat the Adidas Ultra Boost wave. As it was like Nike's. Okay. You remember that when Adidas Ultra Boost were popping, man.
I did work experience when they were banging. Like
really?
So when I went to Adidas headquarters in Stockport, I went there for like 5 days, I think it was. And like everything was just Ultra Boost. Yeah. It was crazy. And do you know what Ultra Boost is made of? So they showed us, it was just so weird. So it's like these little silver or clear, like transparent pellets.
Oh, really?
And they warm them up and they create that foam. Like when they get to a certain temperature, so it pops out and it heats up and goes into that type of foam.
Crazy. Yeah. I mean, because everyone loved that foam. I remember people were buying like balls that were just made up of the foam and stuff like that. Yeah. Anyway, the Ultra Boost wave was crazy, and then obviously VaporMax and Nike was like, "Oh shit, we need a comfy shoe, which can combat Yeezy and Ultra Boost."
The 360s as well. They were so sick.
Yeah,
so sick.
Really, really cool, man. Adidas were killing
Air Max 2015s, and then I think they did 2017s as well. But 2015 ones were just class.
Yeah, yeah, man. They were crazy, and yeah, we sold off white VaporMax. We sold quite a few pairs, man.
Do you know what my favorite pair of Nikes are ever?
What,
like the silhouette? Huaraches, the original ones, just so I was obsessed with them.
Yeah,
high school.
They were like another OG, man. Like
if I could have a wardrobe of one shoe, it would be them.
Really,
100%.
Yeah, I used to own one pair back in the day when I was a lot younger, but I haven't touched them since. But they are, I appreciate them. You know,
yeah. Me and my brother had about. Well, I say me and my brother had them and I just robbed them off them when we were kids.
Really?
He must have had about five or six pairs.
On a subject, a massive question for your culture and where from you're from, that sounded weird, but from where you're from, is the 95 versus 110 conversation.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
What do you call them?
110s, for
really,
sure.
Really, 110s. Yeah. My favourite videos, man, watching these like Scouse lads go around like the town centre and just asking people like, no one will say 95s.
No one will say 95s. No, it's such a culture thing.
Yeah.
And it's just because they were 110 quid when they first came. And like, even though they've gone up in price, I think they're like 140, 50, 60 now.
I bought my brother a pair, and I can say this because by the time he watches this, it will be gone past his birthday. But I bought a pair of MX 95s, 110s, whatever, for 180 quid.
What?
Yesterday or 2 days ago from JD. Bearing in mind, they're amazing. I love JD. But yeah, very,
it's such
very
a funny thing, though, because when you go to Liverpool, like one in three people are wearing them.
Yeah. They're amazing shoe, man.
But they have, like, in because they were such a big thing in Liverpool, they have the sickest pairs. So they'll have like the Spark Blues, are they called? Or Blue Sparks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they'll have like the Chili Reds, which are like,
that's cool.
They're like 2008 OGs.
Yeah. Like, so like proper, I mean.
Oh, so sick.
I mean, Air Max heads are a big collector's.
They
man.
Even brought out like a Liverpool and Everton version.
Did they?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the Liverpool version were like red. And then they had like a red tongue and like a red inner sole. So they weren't like the original ones, but you could kind of blend them as the original ones.
Yeah.
And then the Everton ones were obviously blue. So like you could walk through the city and see who supported
who. Do you notice a contrast in style going from Liverpool, let's just say, to here? Because I know there's a lot of, I don't even know what you would call it, but like activewear.
Sportswear, yeah.
Yeah, loads of sportswear up north.
Yeah,
man.
So Liverpool's like so different to the whole rest of the UK in terms of style. So like it has really good style, but it has its own style. But the thing is, everybody wears it. Like they have one style. Like it's so like, I don't know what the word would be, but one dimensional.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like, it's so trend based. So like 1 year it was like Maharishi combats. like everyone in Liverpool wearing like Maharishi Combats. And then the next year it was like On Track suits, and everyone just wears On Track suits with either On running trainers or Air Max 95.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
Like, but like, and then all the girls would wear, I don't know what the brands of the, what the girls wear, but it's all the same stuff. So you go walk through Liverpool city centre and everyone just looks the same.
What do you prefer? The style up there or down? Well, not down here. It's so diverse, but like.
Yeah, no, I think being in London, you just get, like you said, it's such, it's so diverse. And what I think what people do in London really well compared to Liverpool is like, they embrace their own identity so comfortably. I think in Liverpool, because it's such a small city,
yeah,
it's there's lots of pressure to fit in a certain way.
Yeah, I see.
So like people would just copy what their friends have got, and the leader of that friendship group would just copy what their older brother has got, or people that they know who's older. And like, it's that thing of like, from top to bottom, people are very similar in the way they dress. And if you step out your comfort zone and wear something a bit odd, people will, like, everyone will look at you walking past and be like, what the hell? But like in London, everyone's like that person who doesn't want to step out of their comfort zone in Liverpool.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
There's pros and cons to both of it.
Yeah, definitely,
but I would definitely want Liverpool to embrace the culture of London fashion a little bit more, you know?
Okay.
But you can understand why that happens.
Yeah, 100%. Completely.
No one wants to be the black sheep, you know?
No, 100%. And you still, I think that's definitely something that I experienced as being when I was younger. I think it's definitely that kind of, everyone goes through it at some point. But maybe in London, when you get older a little bit, it diversifies a little bit more. Yeah. But anyway, a topic I really wanted your opinion on, being someone who probably lives with this daily, is authentication and fakes. Now the fakes have always been around for a very long time, people faking and counterfeiting stuff forever, but especially in our game now, it is, I imagine, well, it must be at a record high, and it is through the roof, and it's at a place where it's it feels like every other person is messing with reps.
Yeah, well, Louis Vuitton was the first brand to combat counterfeiters back in the day. So Louis Vuitton were founded in 1854, and it was by this guy, Louis Vuitton. He just used to make trunks, like you said, with the Supreme one before, just those cases. So he used to make trunks, and they were made out of wood. And like, people would just copy his style. Like he was like revolutionary with the trunks. Like no one really did trunks. He created them, but such the high quality. And then his son came in called George Vuitton, and he was like, I'm sick of all these people like copying us.
Yeah.
So we started to put like a stripe, like stripes on them. So not the pattern you see today, but literally just stripes. So that it created like a status symbol. So if you were walking around with this trunk on that had stripes, you knew it was from George and Louis Vuitton.
Got ya.
And then a few years later, like the stripes were really easy to counterfeit as well. So then they created that Damier Beam print, which is, you know, like the checkerboard print.
Yes.
So that was like the first print to counteract counterfeiters back in the day. And I think that was like in the 1880s.
Wow.
But yeah, it's been, like you said, it's been going on for over 150 years.
They were making knockoffs back then.
They were making knockoffs, like, in the garden, 100%. Yeah.
But I guess, I mean, what's your opinion about it? How do you authenticate your stuff, man? Because, I mean, I've seen fakes. Now, I don't know too much about like the garments, but in terms of footwear and sneakers.
Yeah, they're good.
The fakes are insane. Yeah. I imagine they're probably even better in designer.
Yeah, for sure. I think In luxury and anything, they have to be good. But like, there's obviously pros and cons of doing it. And I understand why people buy fakes.
100%, yeah, for sure.
Like, whether you agree with it or not, it will not change the fact that people still consume fakes. Like, I just did a documentary with...
I saw that, man. It was sick, man.
Yeah, ABC Australia.
Sick.
Which is on YouTube now. Like, they flew over from Australia, interviewed us, interviewed some people in Manchester, interviewed...
So cool.
Like, they went on a police raid in Manchester to raid a fake place, basically. And like, there's like, it's such a troubling industry because it doesn't just affect the brands. It affects like, it fuels and gives money to like gangs. And like
organizations,
drug organizations, and it's a nasty, naughty industry. So like, what we can do to stop it is just be like really good at authentication. So the pros of buying fake stuff is like, it's cheap. And I think that is the only pro, because like you shouldn't buy it to fit in, because you're not buying it for the right reasons and it is just destroying you personally.
Yeah. Yeah. The
cons of it is like, it's not the real thing. So it will fall apart after a while of using it. And like, it doesn't make you feel any better. Like it might make you feel good for like wearing it, but then like for the first bit of it, but like, then you set yourself a standard to everyone else and you portray this person that you're not. So it's just not a wise way of living your life. Like I'm quite philosophical in that sense of thing. And this kind of topic brings it out of me. Like it's not a good way to lead your life. Like it's effectively living a lie, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I get that.
And people will comment and be like, oh, it's only because you buy and sell pre-loved luxury. It's only because you sell the real things and stuff like that. And yeah, I get it. I get your point of view. But like people buy fake everything. Fake iPhones, fake t-shirts, like fake Nike stuff. Like people buy fake everything. Like it's a lifestyle.
I think here there's a deeper root problem, and that's the idea of fitting in, I completely understand. I'm not, but I've got a, my opinion on it is clouded in the sense that obviously now I'm a little bit older. I'm in my 20s. I've got a bit more money to afford the stuff I want.
Yeah.
And I don't have to buy fakes. Can still fit in by buying the real thing, if I subconsciously want to.
Yeah.
And I recognize that. So it's a bit, so I completely do understand why people do it. And I would like to say I wouldn't buy fakes if I was like 16 now, 15 now. But at the same time, I just don't know, because there's so much pressure to fit in on social media.
Yeah.
So I am a bit, I do completely understand why people do it.
Especially now, because how old are you?
I'm 25.
25, yeah, very similar age. So when we were in school, social media wasn't as big as it is now.
No, nowhere near,
like,
man.
Especially with TikTok, like the pressures, like my girlfriend's little sister's in school, and like it just sounds horrendous the way people communicate on socials now, like in regard with even like the teachers and the peers and stuff like that. Like it's so heavy. Like I don't think I wouldn't survive in school, but it'd be so hard to not be different, to be that black sheep, you know?
Yeah. I mean, because the judgmentalness, that's not even a word, but
you'll get the piss taken out of you when you were in school, when we were in school back in the day. But now people will take the piss out of you online and it could get millions
of views.
Yeah, it's
so different, man. Yeah, it's so different.
It's crazy.
Yeah, the kind of like bullying is no longer just internal at school.
Yeah, it's
it would
wild.
Be like now on a completely
feel
different
feel so sorry for them, man.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. And especially in the day and age we live in, it is difficult. But yeah, I mean, like you said.
So anyway, how do we do it? So this is what I say to like anyone who asks me this. Like my mate is like a joiner. Like he works with woods. And like I would go up to him and be like, because he does a lot of work for us in the unit. I'm like, how the hell do you do that? And he's like, well, I've just done it for a long time and I've improved my skills. And that is basically what authentication is. It's just your job. Like, you know, you do it.
Yeah.
Roy Keane said it about a postman. It's like,
yes.
Like, that's a great clip if you can put that in there.
Yeah.
But like, we've just been doing it for so long. Like when we first did it, don't get me wrong, we bought fakes. We just obviously never sold them on, but we learned from them. Like we'd get them in and we'd be like, after seeing thousands of pairs of the same shoe or thousands of of the same bag, you know instantly when you touch it, when you smell it.
Yeah,
when you,
the smell is a big thing, man. No one gets me. And I sometimes I go to sneaker events, right? And I start smelling these shoes and people look at me like, bro, what the fuck is this guy doing, man? Just before I buy them. And I'm no professional authenticator, but I'm pretty good at it now just because of the amount of shoes that have come in.
Yeah.
And certain shoes I'm very good at.
Yeah.
Like, I could just tell, like, there was a pair of Air Max Patters that came in yesterday and me and my guy Ben, who works with us, we just opened them up and we're like, nope.
Yeah.
Like, straight away.
Nope, it's that quick.
Done. Some pairs that have been pre-loved and I haven't seen too much of. I honestly, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But again, the guys we work with are pretty good. And we also pay, every shoe goes for an authentic, we pay it for a legit check, every shoe regardless.
Yeah.
Because that means the customer can have a receipt if they want.
And it backs you up just in case it is a really good one. We're in a position now where like me and my brother are really good authenticators, don't get me wrong. Like when we're out together and we're walking down the street, like we can spot fakes across the road. You say it's cool, but it's also a bit embarrassing for us.
Yeah, a little bit like nerdy,
a bit sad.
Yeah.
A bit sad. That's probably the right word. But we're fortunate enough now to be able to hire really good authenticators.
Oh, so you're full time.
Yeah. So we don't authenticate the product anymore. Like, don't get me wrong. If they need a hand, if they want our opinion on it, we'll sit down with them and go through it all. Obviously, but yeah, we've got a sick team, man.
What has there been any that been any fake or been any items that come in you can't authenticate. And it's like, wow, there's, because it's pre-loved as yeah. well. And there is that idea of that some things can wear and tear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's what I mean. Like new stuff is so much easier to authenticate because like you've got a direct comparison to yeah. what it should be like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like a 2023 Louis Vuitton bag, if it was new and you got given it, you could literally buy the Louis Vuitton bag off the website, compare it, and then you'd know for future then, and you'd be able to authenticate it. But because ours are really old seasons, they're not really old seasons, that makes it sound like we sell really old stuff, but like 3, 4, 5 years old, some yeah. of the stuff, naturally it wears down. So naturally it will be different to the new stuff. So what we have to go off is like all our knowledge and experience of stitching, of smells, of textures, of fonts, of codes. But we use AI as well. So there's this machine that we use, which basically like microscopically takes pictures of the materials. So it will go from like the canvas, then the leather, then the hardware.
Cool.
Yeah, it is really cool to be fair. It's a company based out in New York. It's sick to be honest. So we use that on stuff that we're not sure on. And then it will get back to us with a answer in like, if they've already got it in the database, it will take less than an hour. But if they have to do some more research and pattern it up. So basically it will send these images off and the AI will match it up to all the
yes,
millions of pictures that they've got.
There's places like that. Yeah, shoes yeah, yeah, now, yeah, yeah.
So if it matches up, it would be like, yeah, it's fine. It's good. And it's like, it's a real problem in the pre-love world, as you'll know. And then if they don't know, they say unidentified.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then if it's not genuine, they won't say it's fake. They'll just say like, don't buy it. You know, because like people don't, like you don't want to say it's fake. To
yeah.
people.
You can't guarantee, yeah. you can't, I guess, guarantee
but
it.
But like being an authenticator, you can't be an authenticator. Like no one's giving you a certificate to be like, you're an authenticator now. Like it is, authentication is just a matter of opinion.
Yeah.
And it's how much you trust the opinion of that company or that
That's
person.
That's true. Yeah.
Like, that is all authentication is.
Yeah. It's crazy, man. I mean, it's a bit of a scary time.
Yeah.
Especially if you're starting that kind of business.
But that's why I did those videos so early on, because no one in the industry was doing real versus fakes or saying, we've got a fake in our hands. Let me show you why it's fake. Because people, we're scared to show people fakes because they're like, if someone sees that I've got a fake in my hands, they probably think we sell fakes.
Yeah.
But then I was on the other side. I was like, no, like, in fact, we need to educate
people.
Because like, the world is abundant, right? Like if people aren't buying off us this time round because they're buying off somewhere else, they probably will buy off us in the future if we give them a bit of advice or like, because when you give something to someone for free, they feel like they owe you something yeah. in return. So that's why like content does so well, like educational content does so well for like attracting audience for future. But like we just did so many videos around authentication and like we became known for that.
Yeah.
And
that's
like,
sick.
Like in, so like there's 5 ways that you learn something. So you read, you listen, you watch, you teach, you speak, and then you teach. So like us teaching people on social media made us even better authenticators, you know, because we were constantly talking about it and
yeah.
we had to make sure that the information we were giving out to these people was so right.
Yeah.
And it just made us like that. Just think about it now, like that just increased our skills so much faster than it would have done if we never did them.
Yeah, it's mate, that is so fascinating, man. That was probably my most intrigued question I wanted to ask, because
yeah,
obviously
you're most curious about, yeah.
Yeah, because I know a lot about it in my space, but I imagine it's probably a lot more of a problem in yours, because I imagine it's been going on for a lot longer as well.
Well, like for example, obviously not with the hype stuff, but which is super expensive, but in your industry, people could buy a fake pair of Adidas yeah. or now, New Balance yeah, yeah. and they're like 60, 80 quid. But if someone buys a fake one of these, it's like 600, 800 quid, you know? Like it's a major difference. And that's why like, if you are wanting to become a reseller, just trust is everything.
Yeah.
Transparency and trust is just the way to kill it in reselling.
Oh, you heard it here first. I think, sir, we're going to wrap up.
Amazing.
That was Ben. That was honestly, mate, so, so good.
No, I love good. Doing these things. So thanks so much for having
me. What have you got planned next, man? What's next for you personally in the business a little bit?
Just like I said earlier on, I don't think it was recording when I was discussing it, like really changing what we do on social. So there's a book I read called Legacy, and one chapter that stuck out to me the most was change when you're on top. Last year we got 950,000 followers. This year I want to get 10,000 followers who would turn into customers.
Yeah, okay,
you know, like cool. I really want to build a community of people who love Lutz Collective. I've just hired someone who is a real talent. She's really good, and hopefully she can do that with me alongside her.
Yeah.
And just create like that transparency, that trust, that authority, that people love Lutz Collective, not just for the content we create, but what we actually do for the world of luxury and pre-love luxury.
Yeah.
That's the plan.
Sick, man. Mm. Well, I'll be keeping a close eye.
Yeah.
I'll be keeping a close eye. Yeah. Guys, check out Ben's socials, personal socials. Now you do a lot of your own stuff personally as well now.
Yeah.
As well as obviously.
Yeah. LinkedIn, Instagram and TikTok. Yeah. I just love talking about business and fashion, you know?
Yeah, mate. I can see why. Very, very, very good at it. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very, very much for watching. The Hype Report drops every Monday, 6 p.m. Yeah. Check it out. If you're on Spotify, give it a little like on the little heart button. And if you're on YouTube, like, subscribe, all that good stuff. And yeah, thank you very much. And I'll see you in the next one.